Good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, January the 25th, 25th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, first show of the new year, Brian Sundberg. Hey, guy.
How you doing?
Well, I'm drying out. How about you?
I'm dry. I wrote on my Facebook page that the sun is out, it's a beautiful day, but there's this huge black cloud over my head that says Kyle Williams on it.
Oh, I thought it could have been county budget. I don't know.
Yeah, the 49er game was, the wound was open more quickly.
Still a little raw, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, boy, two plays.
Oh, I was heartbroken.
Would have had everything all turned around.
Yeah.
So, but this isn't a football review program.
Oh.
So, sorry.
This is always next year.
This year. Later, the fall. Oh, this afternoon, though, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about a specific situation with horse trails on the beach. However, that also is going to morph into some of the staff regulators having what appears to be autonomy in making rule decisions or rule interpretations. So we'll talk a little bit about how that interaction occurs, as well as there's a little bit of excitement around medicinal marijuana, but this one's more from the business model perspective rather than from the consumer perspective. So we'll talk about that also. Confusing? Hope not. We'll find out when we come back.
I'm Jim Mongi, principal of St. Mary's Catholic School and Preschool. Our preschool program is designed to teach and model basic educational and social skills that children will need for success in kindergarten. Students learn about numbers, shapes, and colors. They begin pre-reading and writing. They develop problem-solving and sharing skills. They learn that school is fun. St. Mary's Preschool provides the foundation for a lifetime of learning. Give us a call today at 822-3877, license number 125-401-910.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 416. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ryan Sundberg. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Elbert Hubbard, an American writer, 1865 to 1915. It's on your right-hand side there, dude. There you go. Quote, "Do your work with your whole heart and you will succeed. There's so little competition." Are you contemplating life now, huh?
That's deep.
What do they say? There's never road jam never road jam on the last mile.
Okay.
yeah. Horses are part of the area culturally, at least the last 150 years or so.
Oh, there's a sign in McKinleyville that says horses have the right of way.
Yeah, I saw that too. I wonder where that one came from. It's kind of like pedestrians, right? Four-footed pedestrians have the right of way in California. Yep. They've been used agriculturally in the woods, all kinds of places for a long, long period of time. I can remember 4 or 5 years ago, there was an issue about horses having access through some of the trails in the state parks in southern Humboldt. It had been used, and then all of a sudden, something changed. You've got a situation, you got the Hammond Trail going through your district. Are horses acceptable modes of transportation on the Hammond Trail?
That's a good question. I don't think the horses go on the Hammond Trail. But I could be wrong. That's a good question. I've never
thought of it that way?
No, I've never seen a horse on the Hammond Trail.
Nor have I.
I've been there, so I...
But I know there's a lot of paving and things of that nature.
Yeah.
But it's part of the trail system, and a lot of push has happened around Humboldt Bay for the trail system. And the rails-to-trails push that some have had out towards, I guess, part of your old district.
Well, I still have that. I just don't have the city limits.
Okay. The old Annie and Mary line.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of this stuff, and I think most people perceive it as walking, and maybe dogs are allowed or not, but horses are part of this thing historically also. Mm. Are there accommodations made for horses on trail and trail usage in the county?
Yeah, for sure. There's a bunch of horse trails around, and, right through Clam Beach, there's, you know, designated horse trails, and the county has their system, and the state parks has their system. And one of the things...
Are they the same system?
They connect
now. Consistent?
They connect now.
Okay.
But I just read an email from state parks the other day that said, you know, it's never been authorized to have horses go through their trail system. And so they've been in the works coming up with a new one that would make it so that horses aren't illegally riding through their park. So I was talking to you earlier about, you know, some one of the problems that I see coming up is the state parks is saying, okay, where are we going to put the trail? Well, we think we should put a trail right next to the road. So, you know, within a few feet, there's going to be horses and cars. Just doesn't make much sense to me. And I...
So know, treat them like bicycles?
I guess.
Have you know, a two-foot kick out on the shoulder?
From what I know, it's... That's another, you know, it's kind of interesting how I don't know either. Well, you know, you think state parks would want to come and talk to me. I talked to Jill Duffy, the 5th District Supervisor, before me. And
that would be community commenter Jill Duffy.
Yes.
Yes.
She's good at it, too, huh? But she didn't know much about it either. So I'm a little worried. You know, where did the policy come from where you would want to move horses off of the dunes where they've ridden forever? You know, where did that policy come from? Did it come from some internal staffers? Did it come from the boss? Or, you know, most of the time I like to see, you know, someone elected make those kinds of big policy decisions that really affect people who have historically used the same thing forever, you know?
Because you're biased to electeds or because of the accountability that being elected
Well, the people
put somebody in.
Yeah, the people vote, and they put that person in, and they can vote them out if they don't like their decisions. So, I mean, the accountability is 100% the reason why.
Now, state parks, though, have horse trails.
Yeah.
And there are horse trails already well established.
The horse trails on Little River Beach or Clam Beach and
Clam Beach Little, to Little River,
over by
yeah.
Little River is where we're talking about. Is that's where the state parks section is on the north side, and then the everything down from where the north parking lot is county. So the north part up there, people have always ridden through the dunes there. You know, there's not a lot of people that do it, but the ones that do have done it for a long time, and that's the trail that they're saying they don't want people to ride on anymore. I guess because it, you know, there's endangered plants up there, and I guess they're saying the trails could, the horses stepping on them could.
You mean there are more endangered plants that already haven't been roped off, fenced off, mapped off?
Sure, we could find some more, too.
Well, I mean, we got the plover that is there maybe or maybe not, but that's why the dogs weren't allowed, right? 5-6 years ago?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. In speaking to Jill, community comment Jill,
yeah.
She was telling me they had the same kind of discussion about dogs at Clam Beach and whether dogs should be on the beaches. You know, they chase people, they run through plover nests, and, you know, all the different things why they would not want a dog on the beach. But dogs on the beach, people, you know, taking their animals out to run them, and it's something people have done forever, and they're not destructive. It's something people enjoy and they have a right to do. And, you know, in the Coastal Commission charter, you know, that's access to the beach. I mean, that's one of their main charters.
That's the big cornerstone for their establishment.
Yeah, that's the huge cornerstone, is the people getting out to the beach and enjoying California's beaches, recreation-wise. So blocking that off or restricting it, you know, I think needs to be taken very seriously.
Well, and it's not like horses are roaming wild. You don't take your horse to the beach and turn it loose.
You know?
Normally, there's a saddle involved.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, just put them in the back seat of the car and drive. Yeah. It's not like they're out of control or uncontrolled.
No,
when they're
very
there.
Controlled, yeah.
So most people, I would think, are going to stay on the trail. You put a sign down and say, please stay on the trail. And it's kind of what they do everywhere else.
Yeah.
Why change it even more than that?
Yeah, and from all the people that do ride horses, there's not a lot of people that ride horses anymore. You know, it's dwindled down to a pretty solid handful of them. And the ones that I know are, you know, stewards of the land. They pick up after themselves. They pick up after other people. It's just they want to go enjoy the beauty around here on a horse. So just restricting that is pretty tough.
KINS News and Information Time is 4:22. We'll be back with more from Ryan Sundberg.
Hi, this is Eric from Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai. You know, I think a lot of people forget that we have a great selection of used cars available. We might not have the inventory that some of the larger dealerships do, but I know our quality used cars stack up against anybody else's in the county. Plus the fact, if we don't have something on our lot, come on in, see us, and we can probably find it for you. We have a quality selection of some very nice used cars, what most people were looking for. But again, if we don't have it on our lot, we can probably find it for you at Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai.
Hi, my name is Mark Diaz from Northwood Hyundai, and I invite you to come down. We're open from 8:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night for your shopping convenience. Closed Sundays to be with family. And as my dad used to say, don't bring much money. You won't need it. That's Northwood Hyundai, 7th and D, Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Time is 4:27. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ryan Sundberg. Ryan, the concept of using horses is something that's pretty well established culturally. As you alluded to, it's not as often as perhaps it was, or there may not be as many who participate as there has been in the past. But my sense is that whether it's horses or dogs or whatever, that's one thing. Having new interpretations imposed without notice, without all of the process that government is so well known for, particularly the state, seems to kind of feel like somebody was doing a bum's rush or a quickie through the side door. Do you have that sense?
Well, I think they definitely went through their process. They have a process they go through, and I'm sure they went through that whole process. But, you know, there's a lot of times where, you know, what you have to do, what is the minimum you have to do by law, and then what is the right thing to do to get out to the public and let them know, you know, what you're actually doing, what you could be restricting, and then, you know, being flexible enough to change your plans to make it work for everybody.
That would be like posting public hearings 72 hours and 5 minutes before it started, instead of doing it. Yeah, okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
The gamesmanship, so to speak.
Well, so it's just, how much do you care to let the public know?
Well, wouldn't you think that for those impacted, you would want to have their input because maybe they would have an idea because they're the ones who doing the particular activity or using the particular location.
Yeah, well, I mean, just for instance, you know, they don't have to contact the 5th District Supervisor, but it sure would be nice, you know.
Is there much interaction between the aforementioned 5th District Supervisor and State Parks?
No.
BLM?
No.
California Water Quality?
No.
Okay, let's see. That's rivers, beaches, parks.
You know who is good at it? The Forest Service around here is really, really good.
Okay.
Yeah, Tyrone Kelly that runs the
Forest Service. The Forest Service is national.
National, but they do a great job.
So the state folks pretty much
don't have
as open a communication line as you'd like?
Yeah, but that could be my fault too. You know, I'm new and trying to figure this all out. But when there's things that come and are going to impact people's lives where I live, that's where I would hope that even though they didn't have to, that they would come contact me and say, hey, you know, is there a way that we could make this plan better that suits the needs of everybody that lives there? And
or a heads up.
A heads up, yeah. You know, so a lot of those other agencies you mentioned, I don't know if there's really been a project that, you know, that has impacted my area that I would even want to, you know, that I need to know about. And I know our Board of Supervisors has appointments to some of those agencies that, you know, if there was something big that comes up, they would come back and tell us as board members.
So this is something that kind of happened below that threshold of significant or important.
Yeah.
For the general population, but for the horse users or horse riders, obviously, it's an issue.
Yep.
But there may be a community comment in the future about it, too.
Could be.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah, where those horsey people live.
Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, well, yeah. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 4:31.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. We think of the Coast Guard as being gallant lifesavers, and they are. However, there's another side of the Coast Guard, faceless bureaucrats far away. 3 years ago, one wrote to the Humboldt County Fair Association to say they wanted back the Mendocino Lighthouse lens that's been atop the county fair's main entrance for 63 years. The fair offered to build a new building for the lens. A citizen group, Save Our Lens, began to raise money. Then the Ferndale Museum offered to give the lens a new home. Most letters to the Coast Guard have gone unanswered. 2 weeks ago, though, in an undated letter, the Coast Guard warned Ferndale it would soon send a Lempus to begin removing the lens. They didn't say when he'd arrive or give his name, but we think it's Grinch. In Rome 2,000 years ago, the famous orator Cicero spoke of the arrogance of officialdom. If he were here today, he'd put those Coast Guard bureaucrats in that category. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 4:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt County First District Supervisor, Ryan Sundberg.
Fifth District.
What did I say, first?
I don't know.
Ah, shit. I'll put you anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I bounce around.
Our supervisor at large. Medicinal marijuana is something I think that is at this point in emotional for a lot of folks. The swamp is draining, but it's still, you know, legalization, marijuana use, Humboldt County, what's Humboldt County known for, you know, all those types of things that are out there. But it's intriguing for me to sense when the topic might be advertised as medicinal marijuana, but it then goes into normal business things. Zoning, building, all the regular things that regular businesses have to deal with, paying taxes, sales tax, all these types of things. With the county involvement, I know a lot of the state, but with the county involvement for medicinal marijuana retailers, I know you guys say dispensaries, okay, fine. Retailers. Are they treated just as a regular retail, or are they treated as liquor stores or bars? How are they processed and monitored from the county perspective?
Yeah, well, it's such a new thing, you know, that they had their conditional use permit system at the Planning Commission that they had to go through, and you know, the Planning Commission was very careful on, you know, what kind of impacts is this going to have to the community, and what do we need to see out of you to be able to run this business? You know, and one of the strange things too was the rules to have a dispensary were not set up before they issued some of those permits. For instance, I remember
shoot, aim, fire.
Yeah.
Okay.
My planning commissioner, Sue Mastin, was, we talked a little while back, and she said, how are we supposed to issue a permit when we don't know what the rules are? And conversely, wouldn't this business be very, you know, put at a disadvantage of, you know, they're setting up shop, they're spending money, you know, they're getting all this stuff ready, and they don't even know what the future holds for them. And part of their conditional use permit is they will follow whatever rules come behind in the ordinance. So
that kind of speaks to the profit motive. We're not sure what's going to change in the future, but right now the iron's hot. Let's go.
Yeah, well,
which would make sense.
It makes sense. Yeah.
Now I don't know how the county could issue a permit if there were no standards for the permit to be measured against. Wouldn't you just have to wait rather than say, well, anything goes right now, and we'll start kind of giving you a little bit of focus as things go on. So you may be spending money doing things that you're not going to be able to continue to do in the future. Mm-hmm. That sounds kind of screwy, too.
It is, but it happened. And one of the examples is that two of the dispensaries are in the same business complex out in Myrtletown. And one of the things that were being thrown around was you couldn't have two dispensaries within 500 feet of each other. Well, these two are within that. So one of the reasons why one of the dispensaries only got a one-year permit or one-year conditional use permit was because they didn't know if that piece came into effect where you couldn't be within 500 feet, then there would be a problem. So they, you know, one of them would have to move, and probably the last one that came in would probably be the one that moved. So it is kind of screwy, but they had, you know, the huge pressure and, you know, the patients, safe access for patients and, you know, all the kind of stuff like that was
all the
in
traditional
play.
Arguments.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it was in, and it's interesting now with the, you know, we're doing the moratorium for dispensaries, and if you've got a permit that expires in a year or two, then to reapply, it's the same as getting a new permit. You know, so
the whole process starts all over again.
Well, you have to reapply. They have to issue the permit. So if there's a moratorium, you cannot reapply. Or you can reapply, but it won't. They can't approve it. So you
could legislatively, if you were so inclined, take any business out of business if it has a conditional use permit.
If it has an expiration date on the conditional use permit.
That's kind of a scary thought, isn't it? Or whether it's a traditional retailer or something that's a little avant-garde.
Well, that's, you know, it was a moratorium, which is a pretty drastic step that doesn't happen very often. And, you know, there's huge court cases and there's Department of Justice lawyers looking our way and sending letters to people telling them that they're going to face prosecution. I mean, it's pretty drastic, you know, pretty unique set of circumstances.
Because it's medicinal marijuana and it's illegal on the federal level?
Yeah.
Or because Humboldt County is interpreting state law differently? Or because it's could be argued a restraint of trade or a form of restraint of trade by a local business guy? I mean, there's so many different layers.
Yeah, well, the PAC decision, the PAC versus the City of Long Beach, was the main driver of this, where the court said that the county cannot have a permitting scheme because marijuana is illegal on the federal level. So that threw everything into a tailspin. And
everybody knew was coming.
Well, I don't know if they knew that was coming, but I mean,
state law is still subservient to federal law.
But it's a states' rights issue, you know. So actually, it's at the Supreme Court now. The Supreme Court decided to hear this case, and it's going to be really interesting to see what, you know, is it states' rights or is it, you know, the federal government that's going to win over?
KINS News and Information Time is 4:40. We'll be back with more from Ryan Sundberg.
Right. The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
Hi, this is Craig Brown, Dean of Students and Campus Ministry at St. Bernard's Catholic School. We're praying in these days how we can create an even more definite presence of Christ in the world around us. We pray we all have an opportunity to stop the rush of this time of year to give profound thanks for the many blessings our Lord has showered on us.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Time is 4:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with 5th District Supervisor Ryan Sundberg. Ryan, the argument of states' rights for medicinal marijuana versus federal, I think it probably, if it was something that was legal in all jurisdictions, okay, fine. I think everybody would default to states' rights. You know, local rule, whatever you want to call it. But for something that's illegal in many parts of the country, that changes it significantly, because now if you're writing new law or supporting illegal by federal definition, that's a whole different ballgame, particularly when it's being adjudicated at the federal level. I would think it would be a slam dunk. Do you sense that this is going to be groundbreaking, or if it goes to states' rights, that we're going to start to see new interpretations of the law based on what state you're in even if it's a federal law.
Yeah. From everything I've read so far on what it means that the Supreme Court's taking this up, it is going to be groundbreaking. It'll be a very big deal. For
marijuana or
no, for everything.
Law, period.
For law.
States' rights.
States' rights, law. Okay. You know, does the state have the right to do what they want to do, even if the federal government doesn't like it? You know, and I mean, for me personally, I don't like the government telling people what to do. You know, and so especially as you go down locally from feds to the state to the counties, you know, people that live there should be able to say what they want in their community.
That would be local zoning ordinances in this case.
Yes. Well, we need to be able to have a handle on this. I mean, it's completely out of control. You've got the federal government telling you that it's that you cannot make an ordinance, you cannot do, permit things, but at this, you know, saying if you do, we're threatening you with prosecution. At the same time, they pull away all your funding to fight it. You know, they did
that in the 70s and the 80s during the one of the incantations of the fuel crisis when Jimmy Carter came out and said, if you have your speed limit above 65, you're not going to get any of your gas money. I remember Montana had some posted 75 mm-hmm. and 85, and they had to take it back down to 65 or 50. It may have even been 55. Otherwise, they weren't going to get the money. I know that isn't quite a parallel argument.
I was born in 75. Cut me some slack.
Well, and I was in high school, so I wasn't really paying too much attention. But I do remember the feds playing the game like the state plays the game with the county. Feds doing it to the state saying, well, you can do what you want, but sorry, the money goes bye-bye. Well, give me a break.
But everybody's, you know, I don't see where the state or the counties have, you know, pushed it far enough to where that they said, okay, it's this or that. We're going to either give you money or you're going to play by our rules.
Well, the whole thing with medicinal marijuana is that, though.
Yeah, but they've come out with their just. Yeah, I guess you could be right.
Can't fly with it mm-hmm. unless you're really stupid. You can't drive over the state line with it again unless you're really stupid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it seems like it's kind of in that same section in the ballpark. It may not be quite the same.
What I'd like to see them, instead of attacking the county for regulating it and trying to get the people that are, there's so many people who are doing it the wrong way, you know, grading their properties off and, you know, having these huge, large-scale marijuana operations, selling it, people getting shot, the, you know, sucking water out of the creeks and rivers and dumping all the stuff that the waste,
back
into the river, and people who are growing massive amounts and selling it and not paying taxes on the money they're making. There's so many things that they can go after first before saying, hey, you better close down that dispensary because it's an easy target.
Well, it might be interesting. This could, I suppose, all be connected, tied all together, and it might go back to those areas that you were talking about as part of either the court determination or subsequent determinations. Nice to be on the cutting edge, isn't it?
Oh, it's
that
great.
Bloody edge. I love it too. Well, give us an
keeps
update
it interesting
month. Yeah, it gives us something to talk about. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking shop with Ryan Sundberg. He wants to be a community commenter sometime down the road. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Thanks, someone you love, and I'll see you tomorrow.